own officers shouldn't have been so far behind this. Poe didn't want to fall out with the man, so a peace offering was the right move.
"Sir, as far as I'm concerned, this is your investigation," he said. "I'm happy to help in any way I can, but I would urge you to consider using ESCAS as it was designed, to offer analytical support and advice."
"Fine," Gamble replied. He gestured for Reed to approach.
"Sergeant Reed, you're back on ESCAS liaison, but this time, do it properly."
"Sir," Reed acknowledged with a deadpan face. That Poe had exhumed a corpse and gatecrashed a gala had hardly been his fault, but he was wise enough not to protest. Bradshaw interrupted.
"Everything's scanned, Poe,"
he nodded.
"Let's get out of here, then."
"Where to?"
Reed asked.
"The pub," Poe replied. "I need a drink."
The Odd Fellow's Arms in Keswick was still serving food, real food this time, and they grabbed a quiet table in the paved beer garden that overlooked one of the town's car parks. Poe ordered giant Yorkshire puddings filled with lamb stew for himself and Reed, and a vegetable lasagna for Bradshaw.
"What do we need to know next?" Poe asked.
Reed said,
"I don't know what we know now, mate."
"Fair point," Poe said. For the next half an hour, he and Bradshaw ran through the sequence of recent events. By the time they'd finished, the food had arrived, and rather than spit gravy at each other, Poe called a halt until they'd eaten. After they'd refreshed their glasses, Bradshaw, who'd been on her tablet since they'd sat down, said,
"There were two companies running cruisers on Ullswater 26 years ago. One of them ceased trading a few years ago. The father died, of natural causes, before you ask, and the children didn't want to keep it going, so it folded. The other's still going strong, and has been for the last 150 years.
Poe said,
"Okay. If we assume that the cruise is important, then both companies need to be checked out."
"I'll do that," Reed said. "I can access Eden District Council's license department and look into it. If anything needs chasing up, I'll put a couple of detectives on it."
Poe nodded. He'd hoped Reed would take on that task. It would be easier for a Cumbrian to do it.
"You think something happened on that cruise? An accident, maybe?" Reed said. "Rich men are never that bright when they've done something stupid. Their first thoughts invariably turn to covering it up."
Poe shook his head. "No. If something happened, then the percontation point on the invitation means it was planned. At least one person knew about it in advance."
"Quentin Carmichael?" Reed asked.
"Probably. Not definitely."
"Best guess?" Reed asked.
"Most murders have their roots in money or sex, and at the minute, I see no reason to look any further. Quentin Carmichael died with almost £500,000 in his bank account, money that was never accounted for."
So
I think we need to go and speak to someone at this children's home, see if they actually received anything from this auction, or not.
Chapter 34. It was the morning after the night before. Bradshaw, Reed and Flynn met Poe at Herdwick Croft at 8. Flynn was leaving for Hampshire later that morning. There was a political storm brewing over Quentin Carmichael. Unsurprisingly, his children were kicking up a stink and trying to stop the investigation going anywhere near their father. They had connections in Westminster, some of whom were equally as keen to preserve the good Carmichael name, lest they were tarred with the same brush, and some junior minister had summoned the NCA director. He wanted Flynn at his side. She wanted to take Bradshaw back down to ESCAS, but she'd refused.
"We can't justify the expense of a hotel room, Tilly," Flynn had argued. "You can do just as much good back at ESCAS." "I can stay with Poe and Edgar, can't I, Poe?" she countered.
Poe was spared having to explain to Bradshaw why perhaps it wasn't such a good idea for a naive young woman to stay with a cantankerous middle-aged man, when Flynn rolled her eyes and caved.
"Okay, a few more nights."
In the meantime, she asked them to carry on, and to try not to upset everyone they met. Poe grinned wryly, and said he couldn't promise. Bradshaw had been up half the night on the internet, and she'd found somewhere to start. The children's home named as the beneficiary on the invitation card had been called Seven Pines, and it no longer existed.
Although it had been owned by a Cumbrian faith charity, like all children's homes, the local authority had overseen it. The fact that it no longer existed had raised Poe's suspicions, but when he spoke to the duty social worker at Children's Services in Carlisle, she'd said,
"Cumbria hardly has any homes now, Sergeant Poe. Most of our children are placed with foster families. Better value and a far better environment for them. If a Cumbrian child can't be placed and does need a home, they usually go out of county. Costs a fortune, though."
"Okay," Poe said. He was learning something. "And if I wanted to speak to someone about Seven Pines and a charity event that was held to raise funds for it, who would be the best person to speak to?"
"Before my time," she said.
But she wasn't a negative ninny and promised to speak to someone who'd been there longer. She took his number and said she'd get back to him. While they waited, Poe put a jug of strong coffee on the table and they all took a cup, even Bradshaw. Reed had brought donuts and a bag of freshly ground coffee to replace what they'd used in the last few days. Poe smelled them and sighed. They were nice beans, Guatemalan and hand-roasted by the shop Poe used. He thanked him, although it hadn't been necessary. Never in his life had he run out of coffee. His reserves had reserves. Still, it was a nice gesture. He put it to the front of his stash. He'd open it next. Along with the coffee and donuts, Reed had also brought a copy of the Quentin Carmichael file, and they spent half an hour familiarizing themselves with its contents. Nothing stood out, and Poe was happy the original investigation hadn't missed anything obvious. The money was unaccounted for, but there was no evidence of illegality. Bradshaw scanned everything into her tablet, so they didn't need to carry the paper file with them. Reed's phone rang. He looked at the screen and held his finger to his lips and whispered,
"It's Gamble,"
before answering.
"D.S. Reed."
Poe was trying to eavesdrop when his own phone rang. The number began with 01228, Carlisle's area code. He pressed the green telephone icon to receive the call.
"D.S. Poe?"
"Speaking."
"My name's Audrey Jackson, and I'm the assistant director for Looked After Children. I gather you spoke to one of my duty social workers a while ago. You were asking about the Seven Pines Children's Home?"
Poe confirmed he was.
"Would you mind telling me what this is about?"
"It's come up in a murder investigation."
"I see,"
she said. It was obvious she hadn't been expecting that.
"I gather you're not with Cumbria Police."
After explaining that he was with the National Crime Agency, but attached to a Cumbrian murder investigation, she said,
"Are you mobile? Because if you can get to the Civic Centre in Carlisle at midday, I can meet with you. I'll have retrieved the home's records from archives by then."
"Will that include the financial records?"
he asked. If it did, there could be a paper trail to follow.
"I've not seen them, but I'll get on to finance when I put the phone down and make sure we get records going back
26 years,
he answered. By the time he'd finished with Audrey Jackson, Reed's call was over.
"That was the boss," he said. "The body, found in Carmichael's coffin, has been identified as Sebastian Doyle, 68 years old. Everyone thought he'd moved abroad to be with his family in Oz, which was why he hadn't been reported missing."
"He fit the same profile?" Poe asked.
"That's all I have. Gamble said he'd keep me updated throughout the day."
Poe didn't respond. Another victim. Another old man. And at the minute, all roads were leading to Quentin Carmichael's charity cruise. He stood up.
"Come on, we'll need to get a shift on if we want to make that midday meeting."
Chapter 35. It didn't matter how many charity abseils it hosted, Carlisle's Civic Centre remained the most soulless building in Cumbria. Poe believed that uninspiring surroundings led to uninspired thinking, and it didn't get any more uninspiring than the 12-story tower block in which Cumbria's leaders worked. In the county that inspired William Wordsworth and Beatrix Potter, Poe found it shocking that planning permission had been granted to the monstrous eyesore that overlooked the city's historic quarter. The imminent plans to knock it down and start somewhere else couldn't come fast enough. They were shown into Committee Room C, a characterless room that contained nothing that could cause offence, just an oblong table, plastic chairs, and some perspex-covered posters promoting the council's mission statement.
The ceiling light was dim and flickering. Tea and coffee had been arranged for them, along with some biscuits. Reed opened a 3-pack of chocolate bourbons, and they had one each. Audrey Jackson arrived promptly at midday. A bespectacled man was with her. Poe introduced himself, and everyone else did the same. When Jackson sat, he noticed she did so on the other side of the table. The man took a seat beside her. The other thing he noticed was that neither had any records with them. The man with Jackson began.
"My name is Neil Evans, and I'm with the Council's Legal Services, Sergeant Poe. I must insist that you tell me what Seven Pines Children's Home has to do with a murder investigation."
"I told Mrs. Jackson over the phone," Poe replied.
"And now you're going to have to tell me, I'm afraid," he said. "Even though it wasn't one of our homes, Cumbria County Council has a duty of care for every child housed in Seven Pines. And although they're now all over 21, they remain entitled to certain services, one of which is confidentiality."
"This is a murder investigation," Poe said.
"That may be so," Jackson cut in, "but there's still a stigma attached to care leavers, Sergeant Poe. We've had it before. Rather than look for real evidence, the police simply round up all the kids in our care and see which one most fits the suspect profile."
Poe didn't respond. It was probably true.
"So, if you're on nothing more than a fishing expedition, Mr. Evans will ensure we aren't bullied into giving out the names of our children."
Poe summarized what they knew and how they'd ended up at the Civic Center with the assistant director of Looked After Children. He ended with,
"And I have no interest in the children who stayed at Seven Pines, Mrs. Jackson. At the moment, I'm only interested in that cruise, and the only person we know who was definitely on it is dead. Quentin Carmichael. Have you heard of him?"
From the looks that flashed between them, Poe knew they had. Neither tried to deny it. Evans said,
"I'm sorry, Sergeant Poe, but you haven't passed the reasonableness threshold. I cannot expose the Council to the risk of you seeing our records. I appreciate your candour, and I will note that at no point have you asked to see anything to do with the home's former occupants. But if you want to see these records, you'll need a warrant."
Ordinarily, Poe would have been punching the wall, but Evans had a point. He said,
"If I were to get a warrant, would it be worth my while?"
Evans stared at him. Almost imperceptibly, he nodded. Poe turned to Reed.
"How long will it take your lot to get one?"
"You've seen them in action. Gamble's a good SIO, but he's thorough. He won't rush a decision."
It was what Poe had expected. He had neither the time nor the inclination to wait for Gamble to keep catching up. He left the room and dialed Flynn. She answered immediately. It sounded as though she was driving. Poe updated her on the legal roadblock they'd just hit and how he thought there might be something in the records worth seeing.
"Steph, I need a search warrant and I can't wait for Gamble. Can you get Van Zyl to authorize one? If it's faxed to the Civic Center in Carlisle, I'll get D.S. Reed to march it straight over to the Magistrates' Court. They're on the other side of the road, so it'll be a 2-minute job to get it signed."
"And they definitely won't release them without a warrant?"
"Nope. They're scared of the legal repercussions."
"What repercussions?"
"That's what I'm wondering," Poe said.
"Leave it to me," she said.
Poe returned to the small conference room and explained what was happening. Evans agreed to wait.
"The magistrates will be more open to a Cumbrian cop, Killian. You okay going downstairs and waiting for it to come in?"
"You want me to tell Gamble?"
Poe shook his head. He wanted first crack at whatever was in those files.
"We'll tell him, if we find something."
"He's going to be furious," Reed said. "Again?"
"Yep,"
Poe nodded. He didn't care.
Neither did Reed, apparently. He left to wait by the fax machine in reception.
Poe knew that within 5 minutes he'd have the receptionists eating out of his hand. They'd be falling over themselves to bring him drinks and cake. By the time the fax arrived, he'd know all about them, their husband's foibles, their children's dreams, and where they'd be having a cheeky wine after work if he fancied joining them. Poe asked some general questions about the home.
"If it was a charity that ran it, why do you have the records?"
"It's the law,"
Evans replied, feeling he was on safer ground. Officially, we don't buy bed spaces from privately run homes. We go into partnership with them. That means all funding has to be signed off at director level.
It's a way of ensuring the council remains accountable for their waifs and strays, Jackson added. We can't just buy services and forget about them. We remain heavily involved.
It made sense.
Who was in charge 26 years ago? Poe asked.
Jackson looked at Evans. He nodded.
We seconded a woman called Hilary Swift. In those days, the manager of a children's home had to have a social work qualification.
She's still with you?
Retired.
Poe had expected more, either an endorsement of her attributes or a damnation of her failings. It was rare to mention an ex-colleague and then leave it hanging. There was something he wasn't being told. Jackson hadn't got to senior management by gossiping, though. She folded her arms and refused to elaborate. Evans helped her.
Employees and ex-employees are entitled to the same level of protection, Sergeant Poe.
The door opened, and Reed walked in. He passed the document to Poe, who examined it. It was a warrant to recover and seize all records pertaining to the Seven Pines Children's Home, going back 30 years. He handed it to Evans, who removed his spectacles and replaced them with some readers. He studied it, then said,
"All in order. Now, I have everything in my office, because I'd assumed we'd get to this point. I'll need a hand carrying it over, if I can borrow someone."
"Killian?" Poe asked.
"On it," Reed stood. "Lead the way, Mr. Evans."
Before leaving the room, Evans turned and spoke to Jackson.
"Audrey, I'm fine, if you want to talk to Sergeant Poe now."
Poe looked at Jackson. She unfolded her arms.
"Have I got a tale to tell you, Sergeant Poe?" she said.
Chapter 36
"Hilary Swift resigned," Audrey Jackson said. "And it wasn't a resignation after years of dedicated service. It was more like a, if you don't resign, you'll be sacked kind of thing. And it all began with that charity event."
Poe's heart started beating that little bit faster. He leaned forward.
"The one on Ullswater?"
Bradshaw flicked through the images on her tablet until she found the clearest one of the invitation they'd found at the gala. She passed it over. Jackson barely glanced.
"That's it."
"You sure?"
"I am. And the reason I know is because I was one of the investigating social workers after the incident."
Poe looked at her in confusion.
"Why would a social worker be doing the investigating? If misappropriation of funds was suspected, surely the council's financial or legal team would be better placed."
Her brow furrowed.
"I know nothing about finances, Sergeant Poe," she replied. "Although I haven't seen the file, Mr. Evans tells me that there was never a suspicion of any wrongdoing. My understanding is that Seven Pines did all right out of it."
Poe frowned. His theory had just taken a dent.
"But when one door closes?"
"No, I was involved in investigating what happened after the event."
"Explain," Poe said.
Jackson said, "What you won't know, because it doesn't say so on the invitation, is that not only was the event for Seven Pines, it was hosted by Seven Pines."
Bradshaw began flicking through her exhibit photographs. She looked at Poe and shook her head. Jackson continued,
"And what I mean is that Hilary Swift was heavily involved in setting it up, because it was a self-catered event. They basically hired the boat for the evening and did everything else themselves. Four of the boys from the home were there, working as waiters, to cut down on costs, fetching fresh drinks and plates of canapés for their guests, that type of thing."
"Sounds like child abuse," Poe said.
"Not really. The home did this type of thing a few times a year, and it was a bit of a racket for the kids, really." "Why is that, Audrey?" Bradshaw asked. "Because they knew the more cute and helpless they looked, the more tips they'd get. Those kids were streetwise, and they knew how to tug on heartstrings. When I spoke to Hilary Swift afterwards, she said she reckoned the boys had each cleared more than £500.
"In tips?" Poe exclaimed.
26 years ago, that was a staggering amount for a child." "In tips," Jackson confirmed. "And I suppose, when you think about it, it's not an absurd concept.
The guests were all there to support the home. Why not give to the boys directly?
I can think of a few reasons, Poe said. How old were they?
10 and 11, she replied.
There you go, then.
He turned to Bradshaw. How much was 500 quid worth 26 years ago, Tilly? She searched and said, According to the Bank of England's inflation calculator, almost £2,000, Poe.
Poe turned to Jackson. How many kids, especially those from deprived backgrounds, can handle suddenly being given the best part of 2 grand?
It's kind of hard when you make my argument for me.
What happened?
What do you think?
Drugs. Booze. Nothing good. Poe thought things through. He may have started with money as the motive, but he wasn't blinkered to everything else. Lines of inquiry rarely followed a straight line. If the investigation took him away from where he was expecting it to go, so be it. I'm going to need to speak to them, Mrs. Jackson, he said. See if they can shed any light on what happened that night. I'm assuming their names will be in the file.
That's going to be a bit harder than you think, Sergeant.
How so?
Because, Sergeant Poe, the very next day they all bought train tickets to London, and apart from some postcards to Hillary early on, no one has heard from them since.
Chapter 37 Poe was gathering his thoughts when Reed and Evans returned. They were carrying a stack of files. Reed saw Poe's expression and said, What's up? Poe remained tight-lipped. He wasn't prepared to venture new theories in front of strangers. Ignoring Reed's question, he addressed Jackson and said, What happened? I'm assuming that's why there was an investigation.
Partly. Some of the men on the boat said that the boys had been drinking, that they were taking sips of everything they were bringing from the bar. It was a game, I think. See who could get the most drunk.
Poe hadn't been a shrinking violet in his youth. He knew keeping children away from free booze was a fight no one could win. And that was a no-no, I take it.
An absolute no-no, Jackson said. It's the main difference between being looked after by the state and being looked after by a family. The state has no discretion whatsoever. If the legal age of drinking is 18, then no one has the authority to allow, facilitate, or even turn a blind eye to it.
It was a fair point. The state couldn't have rogue foster carers doing whatever they wanted. Turn a blind eye to alcohol, and you might turn a blind eye to cannabis or the age of consent. And Hillary Swift didn't stop them.
She wasn't there. She should have been. Our regulations are clear. No unsupervised activities. So why wasn't she? I can assure you that it formed part of our investigation, Sergeant Poe. She said her daughter came down with a sudden fever, and as half the boys were on the cruise that night, there were fewer staff at the house to call up for cover. She said in one of the numerous interviews we had with her that the men on the boat were the pillars of the community and the boys had never been in any danger.
Reed said, Sounds like bollocks.
It did to us, Sergeant Reed, Jackson said. That and the drinking forced Hillary Swift's hand in the end. Children do run away from homes and institutions, and occasionally they manage to evade the authorities until they're of age. But we have processes to minimize the risk of that happening as much as we can.
You called it in? Poe asked.
Well, not me, obviously. But yes, it was called in, she replied. There was a police investigation, but for us in those days it wasn't exactly missing white girl syndrome. Mr. and Mrs. Middle Class's child goes walkabout and everyone panics. But when it was one of ours, we got little more than a, well, what do you expect? That's what they do.
Poe knew she was right. Although the police had tightened up on children missing from care, he shuddered to think how many had slipped through the net. He shuddered even more when he thought about all the predators out there waiting for children like the boys from Seven Pines. For their sake, he hoped they were alive, well, and thriving. He'd recently read that a child forced into prostitution at the age of 16 would have made a pimp over £200,000 before they were too old to attract punters. And with blowjobs costing as little as 20 quid in London, that was an awful lot of perverts to service
before their youth had depreciated enough for them to be cast aside. Reed said, I remember reading about those boys, actually. The investigating officers took it seriously. Their train tickets had been bought for the first train out of Carlisle the day after the cruise. Cumbria contacted the Met and asked them to look out for them.
And we contacted all 34 councils in London, Jackson added. Told them we were missing four boys, and if they showed up, asking for assistance, we were to be contacted immediately. A few months after they'd run off, Hillary got postcards from them. Said they were loving London. It didn't mean the search was called off, but it did ease the urgency somewhat.
That's it? Bradshaw asked. That can't be it, Poe, can it?
Children in care don't always make good decisions, Tilly, Poe explained. Sometimes they put themselves at risk. There's only so much people like Miss Jackson here can do.
Jackson nodded. We assumed they'd pop up again at some point, but they never did. They either made a success of things, or...
Or they didn't, Poe finished for her. Bradshaw was staring at him. Her eyes were wet. She was upset, and Poe couldn't give her the reassurances she wanted. Instinctively, society felt an alarm should sound every time a child went missing. But the problem was, there was no alarm, and even if there had been, some of these kids were fleeing far worse situations. Dragging them back wouldn't always be the right thing to do. Not for the first time in his life, Poe wondered how social workers held on to their sanity. It had to be one of the most thankless jobs there was, even worse than being a cop. There were no good days. Everything was on a sliding scale of bad to awful. Vilified for taking children away from families, crucified when they didn't.
Fuck that.
Jackson didn't feel like answering Bradshaw either. She said,
Our investigation found Hillary Swift had breached several of the protocols put in place to prevent children like that running away. She allowed them to drink, and there was no way when they got on that train to London they weren't still drunk, and she gave them access to large amounts of money.
And? Poe asked.
And, finally, she wasn't the best person to be running a home like that anyway. She was far too interested in the social side of it all. And yes, of course, the manager had to be visible. The home relied on donations just as much as council funding. But the investigation found that she was obsessed by it. And if some rich and influential men thought it was funny to get children drunk, then even if she'd been there, the feeling was that she wouldn't have stopped them.
Poe needed to move on. The children running off to London might or might not be important, but getting a look at the file sitting on the table was. He turned to Evans. I take it you know what's in these files.
I vet everything that goes out, warrant or not.
Direct me to where you think I might need to look then, please, Poe said. Evans had a thin file on top. He slid it across to Poe.
I've copied some of the documents you might want to review first.
He looked at his watch.
The court is still open. When you've seen the top sheet, you might want to go and get another warrant.
Poe opened it and removed a sheet of A4. It was a 26-year-old bank statement for £7. There were the usual mundane items found in everyone's list of monthly outgoings. Food, TV license, utilities. The amounts were all on the right side of the page. To the left of them was another set of figures. Fewer in number, but greater in value. It was where the incoming money was listed. There were three different sources for that month. A grant, which looked as though it was a standing order from the charity that owned £7, and a local authority payment, which probably differed each month, depending on how many bed spaces they were using. Poe stared at the third. It was a payment by cheque. He checked the page from the corresponding accounts ledger Evans had also supplied. The cheque was from Quentin Carmichael. It stated it was a donation resulting from the Are You Feeling Lucky event. It was for £9,000. Carmichael's account number was also listed.
What the hell?
His breath quickened.
What is it, Poe?
Bradshaw asked. She was getting better at reading his facial expressions. He slid the page across the table. She stared, not immediately seeing it. You've still got photographs of the investigation into the money found in Carmichael's bank accounts, haven't you, Tilly? She nodded. Cross-reference them with the account the check came from. He didn't need her to. He'd always had the ability to imprint salient details into his memory. Bradshaw turned on her tablet and began searching. She wasn't as quick as usual. Eventually she looked up with a confused expression.
"I can't find it," she said.
"Exactly," Poe said. Quentin Carmichael made that payment from a bank account no one knew about. Chapter 38. A relationship manager wasn't a banking position with which Poe was familiar, but as soon as the branch manager had received head officer's verification of the validity of the additional warrant, he handed the three of them over to a Miss Jefferson. Poe suspected it was less to do with him not being interested, he clearly was, and more to do with him not knowing his way around his own system. Miss Jefferson, who wanted to be called Rona, found the unknown account on her computer. She frowned.
"This is odd."
She printed off some sheets, stapled them together, and handed them a copy.
"As you can see, Mr. Carmichael opened the bank account in the May of that year and closed it 1 month later."
She turned her own copy to show them where she was looking. Poe studied it. As far as he could tell, there'd been a flurry of activity before the cruise with 6 separate deposits of £25,000, followed by another 3 deposits the day after the cruise, one of £100,000, one of £250,000, and one of £300,000. Together, they totaled £800,000 exactly.
"Is there a withdrawal sheet?" Poe asked.
"Page 2, Rona replied. He turned the page and read on. There'd been 2 withdrawals, a cheque for £9,000 made payable to the Seven Pines Children's Home, and a cash withdrawal of £791,000 made by Quentin Carmichael. With the balance at 0, the account had been closed.
What the hell had he been up to?
"I see that the deposits into this account were all by cheque or bank transfer, Rona," Poe said. "Any chance you can get me a list?" She looked uncertain.
"I'll need to check your warrant covers that."
"You do that," Poe said. Being the good employee that she was, she locked her computer before she left the room. Poe smiled. It was as if she'd known he'd have spun the monitor round the second she was gone. It didn't matter, though. The bank manager had checked with head office, and if someone had made a deposit into the account on the warrant, their name could be shared with the police. If Poe subsequently needed to dig into the accounts of someone on that list, they would need another warrant. Rona printed off another document. This one had names on. The sudden chill in the room was palpable. Poe stared at the first 5 names. In his head, he added a location after each one. Graham Russell, Castle Rigg Stone Circle, Keswick. Joe Lowell, Swinside Stone Circle, Broughton in Furness. Michael James, Long Meg and Her Daughters, Penrith. Clement Owens, Elver Plain, Cockermouth. Sebastian Doyle, the body in Quentin Carmichael's coffin. 5 men. 5 victims. Poe had his connection. They'd all deposited £25,000 into Carmichael's account before the cruise, and 3 of them had subsequently made additional, more sizable donations after the event. Sebastian Doyle, the man Poe had found in Quentin Carmichael's coffin, had made the largest deposit, £300,000, and Michael James had made the smallest at a measly £100,000. Clement Owens was in the middle with £250,000. The 6th man on the list was called Montague Price. Like Joe Lowell and Graham Russell, he'd made a £25,000 deposit before the cruise, but nothing afterwards. He'd have to get Flynn to check the Holmes 2 database that Cumbria were managing, but Poe was sure Price hadn't come up in the investigation so far. To be fair, until they'd burnt to death, none of the others had either. Poe and Bradshaw looked at each other in bewildered silence. Reed was still studying the list. From the outset, Poe had struggled to accept the men were being randomly selected, but never in his wildest dreams had he thought he'd find proof so absolute. What he had in his hands was a death list. Reed was staring at the document. His face was grim.
"Unbelievable," he said.
You found it?
Bradshaw was looking excited and scared. Sometimes, when the big cases broke, the feeling was overwhelming.
What do you think this means, Poe? She asked.
He read the list again. 6 men got on the boat that night. 5 of them were now dead.
It can only be one of 2 things, Tilly, he replied. Montague Price is either the next victim or...
Or?
Or he's the immolation man.
Chapter 39 Poe was happy to let Gamble take over. Searching for a killer once he'd been identified was a job for the sledgehammer, not the scalpel. It needed a manhunt, not a man-hunting. He'd called Gamble immediately and told him that they'd found the link between the victims. To his credit, he didn't shout too much. Flynn was back in Cumbria and insisted on being briefed. They met in the bar at Chapwell's, and she seemed happy with what they'd achieved in her absence. Eskass had come out of it okay in the end. She'd said she'd let him know later how the meeting with the director and the minister had gone. Bradshaw broke down the financial information in greater detail while Flynn took notes. She'd be the one writing up the official Eskass report. It would form part of any subsequent prosecution, so it had to be meticulous. Reed sauntered into the bar halfway through, but waited until the information exchange had finished.
"What have you got, Sergeant?"
Flynn asked, making it clear she was back and in charge. It was how it should be. The DI organized the show. The DS ran it.
"He's gone," Reed said.
"Montague Price?" Poe asked.
"Yep. I was on the raid. His house was empty, but it looks like he left in a hurry."
"And?"
There was always an and with Reed. He was a natural showman. His face cracked into a smile.
"And it's him. CSI found traces of blood on some of his clothes. The DNA is being fast-tracked. There was an empty bottle that we think contains some of the accelerant he used, and there was also a vial of an unknown liquid. Looks medical. It's been sent to the lab."
He reached out and shook Flynn's hand.
"I'm to officially thank you, ma'am. DCS Gamble's busy, obviously, but he didn't want it left unsaid. He knows it wouldn't have happened without Eskass."
He turned to Poe.
"Even you, Poe. He asked me to tell you that he still thinks you're a bit of an idiot, but..."
"An idiot? That's what he called me, an idiot."
I'm paraphrasing. His actual words were, "massive bell end," but there are ladies present.
Bradshaw giggled. Even Flynn smiled.
He'd been there before, the silly season, right after a case finished. It was a natural high. Everything was funny. Price hadn't been found yet, but he would be. Gamble would use everything at his disposal. He'd be on the news later that day, and he'd have already circulated Montague Price's picture to the press. It's what Poe would have done. Close the net. Leave Price thinking there were eyes and ears everywhere, that he had nowhere left to hide. He might be intelligent as far as psychotic lunatics went, but Montague Price had no idea he was about to become the most famous man in the country. Poe walked to the bar. They all deserved a drink. While he waited for the barman to take his order, he turned to look at his friends. They were laughing and joking, enjoying a job well done. So why didn't he feel the same? He knew what it was. Like a pea under his mattress, Carmichael's money was bothering him. The amount withdrawn from his secret bank account when he closed it, and the amount found in his official bank account didn't add up. The 6 men on the cruise had given Carmichael £800,000. Only £500,000 had been found. Not counting the £9,000 donated to Seven Pines, almost £300,000 was still unaccounted for. And there was still no reason why his name had been carved onto a victim's chest. Poe didn't like loose ends. They were untidy. Sometimes they unraveled. While everyone else celebrated, Poe brooded and pondered.
Chapter 40 Poe and Reed stayed up late. Flynn left early to begin writing Eskass's report. Bradshaw stayed until 1 a.m., but eventually cried off, saying she had stuff to be getting on with. Reed raised his eyebrows after she'd gone.
What stuff does she have to do at this time of night?
Computer games, I expect, Poe replied. Reed decided to stay the night. He booked a room, and they drank whiskey and smoked cigars until the early hours. They discussed how Gamble would handle the search for Montague Price. Earlier, they'd all watched the 10 o'clock news, where Gamble had made the first of what Poe was sure would be many public appeals. Although he privately thanked Eskass, it must have slipped his mind to do it publicly. If you believed what he said, it was only because of his determined and unwavering leadership, along with the extraordinary skills of his detectives, that the breakthrough had been made. Oh, well. Poe had never been in it for the glory. A late night and a bellyful of whiskey did not make for a pleasant morning. Edgar woke him at 8. His look said,
"A piss, breakfast, and a walk, please."
He groaned out of bed and threw open the front door. The harsh stab of sunlight he'd expected didn't happen. Instead, thick tendrils of fog crept into the croft. Putting on some old trainers, he dawdled outside to see how bad it was. The fog at Shap was legendary and could trap the fells in a thick blanket at any time of the year. Today's was a beauty, like looking out of a 747's window as it flew through cloud. Edgar ran off and disappeared in the vast whiteness. Visibility was down to a handful of yards. Like a giant eraser, the fog had eradicated everything from view. He couldn't see Shap Wells. He could barely see his own hand. Poe wasn't leaving the house until it cleared. It was too dangerous. He got a few slices of bacon frying and toasted some bread. Edgar would find his way back by smell. His phone rang. It was Flynn.
"Morning, boss."
"They've got him."
Poe's stomach flipped, and it was nothing to do with his hangover.
"Price?"
"Yep."
"Where?"
"They didn't catch him. He walked into Carlisle Police Station with his solicitor 3/4 of an hour ago."
Thrown by the unlikely scenario of the immolation man handing himself in, Poe could manage no more than,
"Bloody hell."
"Indeed," said Flynn.
"What's he saying?"
"Nothing yet. He's still locked in a room with his solicitor. Gamble wants to know if you want to be there when he starts talking."
Poe didn't, and luckily he had the perfect excuse. Every Cumbrian knew of the Shap fog. Gamble would understand.
"It is a bit thick this morning," Flynn agreed after he'd politely declined. "I'll go and represent our interests. I think I can just about make out the road from here."
"Okay, boss. Keep me updated."
"Will do."
After his breakfast, he sat outside with a coffee while Edgar exercised. Around 10 a.m. the sun began burning through the fog, and Poe reckoned it would be safe to have a wander over to the hotel to see if Reed had surfaced. He was halfway there when his phone rang. It was an 020 London number. He answered, and the Director of Intelligence, Edward Van Zyl, bade him a good morning.
"Who are you speaking to, Poe?"
Van Zyl asked. Poe stopped, looked at his handset in confusion before replying.
You, sir. Director of Intelligence Van Zyl."
Van Zyl replied,
"You must be mistaken, Poe. The last time we spoke was just before you went on leave."
"Okay.
You've heard Price is in custody?"
"I have, sir."
"What's your take?"
Poe composed himself before answering.
"The discrepancy in the money worries me, sir. Best part of 300 grand just disappeared."
There was a pause before Van Zyl spoke again.
"Do you think Price is the killer, Poe?"
Poe took a moment.
"It's possible, sir."
"Only possible?"
"There might be physical evidence, sir, but I haven't found a motive. It might have been over money, but if it were, why wait until now? I think we all need to wait until he's been interviewed, sir."
"That's certainly an option, Poe. Have you spoken to D.I. Flynn about our trip to the minister's office?"
"Not yet, sir."
"Well, don't. That list you got from the bank has set the cat among the proverbial pigeons, I can tell you. There are people of influence down here who are getting anxious about what else you might uncover. They want this finished quickly and quietly, Poe."
Poe couldn't work out if he was being threatened or encouraged. Van Zyl continued.
Quentin Carmichael threw more than one party, and some of the men who attended them now hold positions in government. They don't want to be dragged into anything. Some very senior civil servants have reviewed the case file and have decided that now Montague Price is in custody, everyone should focus on ensuring he is convicted. They're putting pressure on the CPS to do exactly that, and anyone who tries to stand in their way will be crushed. The official line will be that Quentin Carmichael was an early victim of Price.
That's what they say, is it, sir?
It is, Poe. Despite the concerns we share, Montague Price is the man they want. A convenient full stop. The director didn't add anything for a few moments. Eventually he said, "But that's not the way we do things, is it, Poe?"
"No, sir. It is not."
"And now that the case is finished and SCAS are no longer involved, I'm sure you'll be keen to resume your leave."
"Yes, sir. And thank you."
"Why are you thanking me, Poe? We haven't spoken for ages, remember?"
Bradshaw was up, headphones on, eyes glued to her tablet. She waved when she saw him. There was no sign of Reed. Poe got his room number from a porter and gave him a knock.
"Piss off!"
Poe knocked again. The door opened and Reed peered through the crack with bloodshot eyes. Poe hoped he felt better than he looked.
"Come on," Poe said. "I'll buy you something to eat." "I'm not getting up."
His breath stank of stale whiskey.
"Montague Price is in custody. Handed himself in this morning."
Reed's red eyes snapped open.
"Give me 10 minutes.
"Take 15,
Poe replied.
"And brush your teeth."
20 minutes later, a freshly showered Reed met them in the restaurant. Bradshaw was still on her tablet. Poe didn't know if she was fighting crime or goblins. Her concentration level seemed to be the same for both. Poe poured hot drinks for everyone and threw Reed a box of paracetamol. Reed dry-crunched a couple of tablets while he waited for his coffee to cool. For several moments he stared into space. He was quiet. Far too quiet for a detective just after their only suspect had been apprehended. He turned to Poe and said, "Does any of this feel right to you?" Reed was a great cop, with even better instincts. With them both feeling nervous about Price, someone should be thinking about what to do if things didn't go the way Gamble wanted. Van Zyl had told him to stay on leave. He wondered if that were premature. Gamble might authorize some ancillary investigating. It would need to be done anyway, and Poe wanted to keep moving.
"There are two possibilities, as far as I can see," Reed said. "Either Price is being set up by the real killer, or..."
"Or he is the real killer, and he thinks he can beat it," Poe finished for him. "And if he thinks he can beat it, then we need to assume that he can beat it. Either way, I don't think we're finished."
"What are we going to do, then?"
"Something we should have done yesterday," Poe replied.
"We're going to pay Hilary Swift a visit."
Reed looked worried.
"I don't know about that, Poe. We can't question someone who may end up being a key prosecution witness. We should at least wait until Price has been interviewed."
Poe stared at him. Reed sighed.
"I'll call Gamble. It's his investigation at the end of the day."
He was right, of course. It was the SIO's call, not his.
"I'll call him," Poe compromised.
"Go ahead. He'll tell you to piss off, though."
Poe moved to the window to get a better signal and called Gamble. He must have been holding his mobile as he answered immediately.
"Sir, I know SCAS are no longer actively involved, but D.S. Reed and I thought we'd go and speak to Hilary Swift."
"Why, for God's sake?"
"Background information. Tidy a couple of loose ends, that sort of thing. She might not have been there on the night, but she probably knew Price was going to be there."
"Wait until we've spoken to Price, Poe. He's in with his solicitor now, trying to construct a deal."
"A deal?"
"Yeah, can you believe it?" he replied. "But he's entitled to try, I suppose. We'll listen to what he has to say, then the CPS will put him away for the rest of his life."
"Hopefully, sir," Poe said.
You're not convinced, are you? Like you say, sir, we need to listen to what he says.
Despite our differences, Poe, I know we wouldn't have him without you, Gamble said. Poe didn't need his arse wiped. He needed permission to continue investigating. But he had to play the game.
Kind of you to say, sir, but all I did was come in with a fresh pair of eyes. You'd have got there in the end.
Go and see her, then. But take Reed, and you're not to do it under caution. Background questions only. If there's anything we can use against Price, I want to know immediately.
Poe thanked him and returned to Reed and Bradshaw.
We're on, he said.
Reed looked at him.
He said yes.
You won't be offended if I check.
I will be offended if you check, but do it anyway.
Reed waved him off.
I trust you, Poe.
He looked at his watch.
We'd better have another brew before we set off. Neither of us will be fit to drive yet.
Chapter 41 Reed drove.
He said he didn't want to be in the passenger seat, feeling as rough as he did. Poe didn't argue. Despite the children's home being sold years ago, a quick check of the electoral roll told them that Hillary Swift still lived in Seven Pines. Poe was surprised they found it. The sat-nav said they'd arrived when they were still 3 miles away, one of the joys of living in Cumbria, but Reed called Ambleside Police Station and got directions. Seven Pines was located between Ambleside and Grasmere, and was a magnificent building, detached, full of character and the size of a small hotel. The external wood was painted yellow. For some reason, traditional Lake District houses all seemed to have brightly painted wooden beams. It was tucked up a small lane, and had views of Rydal Water. Poe's antennae started twitching. He looked across at Reed, and saw the same sense of unease. They were both aware of how much property cost in the area. It was on a par with London. Before they got out of the car, Poe sent Bradshaw a text. They waited until she replied, and when she did, Poe grunted in satisfaction. He knew how to start the interview. They'd called ahead, so Hillary Swift was expecting them, although they hadn't told her what it was about. Poe and Reed walked up the immaculately raked shale path and knocked on the door. It opened immediately. They presented their identification, and she studied each one carefully. Hillary Swift had the type of accent that grated, an affected upper-class drawl that she'd perfected over the years. Poe suspected he knew more about her than she wanted him to know. She'd been born and brought up in Maryport, although, if anyone ever asked, she'd rewritten her history and claimed a more upmarket Cockermouth heritage. Poe was all for people bettering themselves. It was how the human race advanced, but snobbery wasn't the way to do it. She was wearing a knee-length skirt and matching jacket, and her hair was a perfect Margaret Thatcher rip-off. Poe knew she was in her 60s, but in questionable lighting she could have passed for 50. Inviting them inside with a smile that didn't reach her eyes, she guided them towards the lounge. It was clearly her showstopper room. The view out of the bay windows was stunning. Through a tunnel of trees, the eyes were guided to distant views of the lake. The interior wasn't in tune with the exterior, though. Where the outside was governed by national park regulations, the inside was proof that good taste couldn't be bought. It looked like a bottle of Pepto-Bismol had been mixed with glitter, then sprayed everywhere. And the hideous color theme aside, Swift didn't believe in clean lines or the minimalist approach to interior design either. Poe had never seen a room with so much furniture. Innumerable tables were heaped with lamps and bowls and clocks. The walls were jammed with bookcases and shelving units. They were adorned with expensive-looking tat. Her philosophy seemed to be, if it shone, she should own it. Poe was scared to sit down in case he knocked something over. A social worker's salary didn't come close to paying for all this.
"I can't give you long, I'm afraid," she said. "My grandchildren came back from Australia with me, and my daughter follows in a fortnight. We're having a family holiday. They're upstairs, playing nicely for now. But I don't know how long that will last. I'll get us some tea."
"I'll give you a hand, Mrs. Swift," Reed said.
He knew Reed had gone with her so that Poe could have a nosy. He approached the window and counted the pines. There were five. He was still looking for the other two when Reed and Swift returned with a fully laden tray. She saw where he was looking.
"Storm Henry, I'm afraid," she said. "We lost two of them in February 2016.
He'd long been of the view that if you wanted people to take storms seriously, they needed names like Roofwrecker or Bastard rather than Henry or Desmond. No wonder the public were constantly surprised by them.
"Can you tell me how you came to live here, Mrs. Swift?" Poe asked.
"Can I rephrase that question for you, Sergeant Poe?" she smiled. "Because what I think you meant to ask was, how can I afford to live here? Am I correct?"
"You are."
"When the charity closed the home, I was given first refusal on the sale of the property."
"I was more interested in..."
"In how I paid for it?"
"Yes," Poe said.
The text from Bradshaw had confirmed there was no outstanding mortgage. Swift owned Seven Pines outright. A flash of temper lit her eyes.
"My late husband, he knew when and where to invest our money, Sergeant Poe."
Although he'd read about her husband, he'd worked for some accountancy firm in Penrith, it was a vague answer. Accountants were well paid, but they weren't massively well paid. He decided to leave it for now. A noise from upstairs was followed by the sound of a child crying. Swift left her seat and walked to the door. She raised her voice.
"Annabel! Jeremy! Grandma's downstairs talking. Can you keep it down, please?" "Sorry, Grandma," a child replied.
Poe noticed that when Swift raised her voice, her cultured accent slipped and the Maryport girl shone through.
"Do you know why we're here, Mrs. Swift?" he asked when she'd retaken her seat.
"If I were pressed, I'd say one of the home's ex-residents has been naughty and you want some background information on them. That's what it normally is. I retired a long time ago, but I still keep in touch with some of the children I looked after."
"Do you remember a man called Quentin Carmichael?" Poe asked.
Her eyes narrowed.
"So, that's why you're here, because of what happened on Ullswater. But why now? It was over 25 years ago."
"Something's come up," he replied.
"About the boys who ran away, or about the cruise itself?"
Poe didn't answer. Sometimes it was best to let witnesses take you where they thought you wanted to go. Swift's face hardened as she stared into the distance.
"Those damn boys!"
Poe waited to see if she would expand.
"Over my years here, Sergeant Poe, I looked after more than 100 children, and I'm not blowing my own trumpet when I say I had more than a small impact on their lives. The children appreciated the home I kept for them. They appreciated the boundaries I set, and they appreciated the jump start their lives needed."
"Sounds like you were a pillar of the community," he said.
"But those four boys, well, some children just don't want to be helped. I got them a marvellous opportunity with some marvellous people. If they'd done what I asked, they'd all have got decent apprenticeships out of it when it was time for them to leave school. Those men had excellent connections and were keen to help in any way they could. All I asked was for them to behave themselves. But did they? No. As soon as they realized they weren't going to be supervised, they all got drunk. Like common yobbos. They thought nothing of the home and nothing of my reputation."
"Seems they were a bit ungrateful," Poe said.
"Doesn't it? Well, I don't mind telling you, I tore an almighty strip off them when they came back. Damn near woke the whole house up."
"Really?"
Poe had been in enough interviews to know when someone was lying. Swift's anger sounded forced.
"Yes, really," she said.
"So they ran off?"
"They did. Took their stuff and the money they'd made in tips and hitched a ride to Carlisle Station."
"Why Carlisle?" Poe asked. "Penrith's nearer."
Swift said she didn't know. It was just what the police had told her. He glanced at Reed to see if he had any questions. Other than helping with the tea, he hadn't asked her anything. Unbelievably, he was starting to nod off.
How much had he drunk last night?
However, Poe was starting to flag as well. The room was warm, and it had been a late night. Still, to fall asleep in front of a witness was something new. His phone was on silent, but it vibrated in his pocket. He asked Swift for permission to answer, but pressed receive before she had a chance to reply. It was Flynn.
"What's up?" he said.
"Where are you?"
Poe glanced at Swift, who was smiling.